This is Donald S. Reinhardt. I'm reading from my newly written book called The Encyclopedia of the Pivot System. This is tape number 2. Question number 6. What is the improper mental attitude toward study and practice? The improper mental attitude toward study and practice consists of a general misconception on the part of the student of the entire purpose of study and practice. This attitude embodies erroneous impressions and undesirable personal traits, either singly or in combination. In the opinion of the student with this malady, the instructor is always guilty until proven innocent. Such a student may come to take a lesson simply to see what the instructor has on the ball. He may have been forewarned that the teacher would try to change his embouchure, and his visit may be a combination of fear and general mistrust. Or he may have visited so many teachers previously with negligible results that the new instructor has 3 strikes against him before the lesson even begins. Or the student may have such tremendous conceit that he is completely unreceptive to any suggestions from anyone. His definition of a splendid instructor is one who will compliment him, not criticize him. Or he may be the type who imagines that somewhere there is a magic method whereby he may acquire overnight the relaxed perfection while playing for which he yearns. Or he may have formed the habit of absorbing the remarks of many different players without considering the source or the validity of the information. Or he may be the type who experiments continually with different model mouthpieces, instruments of various bores, makes, and models, lip exercising gadgets, and embouchure formations, to name just a few of the devices employed by the escapist. Such closed mind specimens should realize that logic, concentration, hard work, and sweat are essential factors for study and practice. Otherwise, they should save their instruction money. Question number 7. What are the 3 primary playing factors? The 3 primary playing factors are, first, the embouchure formation, that is, the lips, the mouth corners, the cheeks, and the entire facial area involved while playing. Second, the tongue and its manipulation, that is, the tongue arch, the tongue level, and the length of the tongue backstroke. And third, the breathing. That is, the diaphragm and abdominal regions, the ribs, the shoulder blades, the lungs, and the throat. Question number 8. Which one of the 3 primary playing factors is considered the most important? All 3 primary playing factors, that is, the embouchure formation, the tongue manipulation, and the breathing, vary in relative importance at different stages throughout the student's career. Therefore, no one factor may be considered the most important except in relation to the student's degree of development. Most of our finest present-day performers agree that they consider correct breathing the most important physical playing factor. This statement is quite true, but only after the player has arrived at his final stages of playing perfection. Some of these fine artists have had the good fortune of playing correctly for such a long period of time that they are inclined to forget some of the difficulties that they too had encountered before they reached their present high playing level. Much like riding a bicycle. You may have been riding for so many years that you have completely forgotten the difficulties encountered and the number of times that you fell off before your sense of equilibrium took hold and made you a rider. If a fine oboist selects an excellent instrument but uses a defective reed, the results will suffer, regardless of whether his breathing is correct or incorrect. The same holds true in brass playing. It is logical to assume that the embouchure formation, that is, the lips, the mouth corners, the cheeks, and the entire facial area involved while playing, and the tongue manipulation, that is, the tongue arch, the tongue level, and the length of the tongue backstroke, must not only be functioning properly as separate and independent factors, but must definitely be synchronized with the breathing factor, that is, the diaphragm, the abdominal regions, the ribs, the shoulder blades, the lungs, and the throat. Before any relaxed playing perfection can possibly take place, for example, if a performer's playing difficulty is analyzed and traced to a faulty embouchure formation, the error must certainly be corrected, and the tongue and breathing factors be given ample time to compensate themselves to the new and slightly different blowing resistance of the adjusted embouchure before coordination of the primary playing factors can be obtained. Question number 9. When an alteration or an adjustment of one of the primary playing factors is prescribed by an instructor, are the other two factors affected? Any alteration or adjustment of one of the primary playing factors will definitely affect the other two factors. For example, if a performer's playing difficulty is analyzed and traced to a lack of compression in the embouchure formation, the error must certainly be corrected, and the tongue and breathing factors be given ample time to adjust themselves to the new and slightly different blowing resistance of the adjusted, more highly compressed embouchure before synchronization of the three primary playing factors can be obtained. Similarly, any adjustment of the tongue manipulation would affect both the embouchure and the breathing factors. A breathing alteration would affect both the embouchure and the tongue manipulation. Successful brass playing as a result of subconscious synchronization of the three primary playing factors. Question number 10. Does the artist performer always make a fine instructor? The artist performer does not always make a fine instructor. While it is a fact that playing and teaching are often regarded as being inseparable, they definitely represent special accomplishments in themselves. Many performers are so interested in the merits of their own playing that the art of pedagogy becomes a mere hobby or sideline, and their instruction suffers accordingly. Others do not have the proper temperament or the type of personality which will permit them to become fine instructors. It is also true that because many of our finest players have achieved their artistic heights with little or no physical, mechanical, or musical difficulty, they are unable to cope with the many and varied problems which confront nearly all students. Many conservatory and college catalogs, brochures, manuals, and pamphlets proudly advertise the playing triumphs of the various members of their teaching staff, but seldom, if ever, mention the names of the students that they were directly responsible for turning out. Though it is true that the popularity of a well-known performing artist may be the lifeblood for padding school enrollment, it does not necessarily follow that his students would be a credit to him, to themselves, or to the college or conservatory which they represent. The prospective student should investigate and carefully examine the instructor's list of students, and, if possible, he should discuss the matter with several of them before making his decision regarding the merits of the teacher being considered. Logic and common sense should tell him that fine playing and fine instruction must not be confused. Question number 11. Why and how must a student's ear be trained logically and progressively in tonal timbre as well as in pitch? Some performers become so confused by the variations in tonal timbre, that is, tone quality, and with the ranges of the different instruments, other than their own, that they are unable to recognize and name the pitches of the tones being played. For example, a trumpet player may find that although he has little or no difficulty in detecting and naming the notes being played by another trumpet performer, that he is completely unable to recognize the pitches being played on the piano. This is because his particular ear has become attuned to the timbre of the trumpet, but not to that of the piano. The tonal timbre of stringed and reed instruments is often foreign sounding to a brass performer who has not had the advantage of absorbing the necessary timbre and pitch deviations. Few cases of this nature are ever corrected by taking the accepted mode of pitch dictation from the equally tempered scale of the piano. Considering the amount of time that is consumed taking pitch dictation from the piano in the traditional ear training classes, improvement is certainly negligible in most cases. Therefore, I am a firm believer that the student's ear must be trained logically and progressively to accept the numerous variations in tonal timbre as well as in pitch. In order that the brass instrumentalist's ear may be trained in a rapid and thorough manner, it is absolutely essential that he learn to take pitch dictation from another performer while playing his own instrument. He must not pass on to another instrument, even in the same family, until this has been thoroughly mastered. When this has been accomplished, he should then choose the other instruments in the brass family. After mastering this group, he should move on to reed and stringed instrument groups. When he commences taking his dictation in the reed instrument group, the trumpet player should make the clarinet his first goal, the trombone player, the bassoon, and so forth. Because of the similarity of both the timbre and the range, they will serve as an adequate introduction to the new family. The player who is giving the pitch dictation will find the chromatic stroboscope an invaluable assistance, because the intervals of both the tempered and the just scales may be accurately determined at a glance. The frequency of a tone lying within the range of the piano keyboard may be determined directly. This method is visual and does not involve the sounding of any comparison tonality. Deviations are measured from the notes of the tempered scale based upon the standard A, that is concert pitch, of 440 cycles per second. All readings may be obtained directly without further computation or reduction. The pitch dictation should be given in such a manner that the player will have full view of the chromatic stroboscope reading panel. He may then adjust his pitches accordingly. The class taking the pitch dictation should not be permitted to view the panel of the device. In this way, the dictation may be accurate to a hundredth of a semitone, each degree called a cent, so that the pitches sounded by the instructor may be faultless, regardless of the type of instrument being used for the test. The teacher may readily explain the difference between the tempered and the just scale and visually prove the deviations to the class. From time to time, the instructor may have all members of the ear training class playing their particular instruments, thereby giving them the opportunity of checking their own intonation on the stroboscope. The sharpness or flatness of any pitch may be determined at a glance, and definite corrections may be made instantly, regardless of the interval involved or the type of scale chosen. Accurate records may be kept to show the student his progress. Blanks might be provided for this purpose. The chromatic stroboscope is a definite must for all modern classes in ear training. It certainly proves that the eye may be made to assist the ear in achieving its goal in intonation. While giving stroboscopic pitch dictation to a class composed entirely of trumpet players, the various stages in tonal timbre and pitch of the different instruments should be introduced in the following manner. Number one, recognize pitches as played by another trumpet performer. Number two, recognize pitches as played by other instruments in the brass family. Number three, recognize pitches as played by the clarinet. Number four, recognize pitches as played by other instruments in the reed family. Number five, recognize pitches as played by the violin or viola. Number six, recognize pitches as played by other instruments in the stringed family, including the piano. Number seven, recognize pitches as played in chord fashion by various groups of brass, reed, and stringed instruments. This method of progressive timbre and pitch development is both thorough and logical, and certainly more interesting to the student than traditional pitch dictation from the piano. Many string players find little or no difficulty while taking dictation from the piano because of likeness of timbre. Brass performers should be given the same consideration. The student may also improve his ear and thoroughly familiarize himself with his instrument by selecting eight measures or so of a familiar tune and playing it by ear with his eyes closed. When he has completed this in a satisfactory manner, he should play the tune a half tone higher, with his eyes remaining closed. Ascend chromatically, as high as possible, in this manner. Now, he should start with the original key once more, and descend chromatically to the lowest note on his instrument. He should do this routine every day. From time to time, however, he might alter the tune for the sake of variety. This may be practiced with or without hand vibrato, depending upon the type of work the player may be doing at the time. He should remember to keep his eyes closed and to listen attentively throughout the playing of each drill. This is a very beneficial study for developing and maintaining a keen faking ability, which is so necessary to all performers in the dance field and definitely helpful to all players. Another approach for improving your ear is to form the habit of playing by ear with the radio, television, or recording outfit. Remember, keep your eyes closed. Learning tunes without music, after hearing them played only once, also assists you in the development of tonal memory. Many players in the dance field learn to improvise, that is, ad lib, by playing with other performers, guitar, piano, accordion, and so forth. There are also rhythm records on the market for this purpose, where only the background is played. Some of these rhythm records include the written chords, the melody, the lyrics, and one or two suggested improvisations. Interval studies provide splendid material for acquainting the student's ear with every type of interval. The constant repetition of intervals impresses the pitch relationships on the mind and the sense of feel involved while playing them. Regardless of the method chosen to improve your ear, it should be given your most diligent daily effort. Interval studies should be a part of any performer's ear training. Question number 12. What is the sensation theory, and how can its adoption improve my playing? The sensation theory is the approach to the instrument whereby the player relies primarily on feeling rather than on sound to produce his notes. Generally speaking, the more completely the dependence on feeling the player can achieve, the more accuracy he will acquire. As dependency on sound is lessened, the player arrives at how a note will feel rather than how it will sound. His accuracy and assurance will grow commensurately. Most of the finest professionals whom I have analyzed seem to have a balance between the feel and sound factors. In my opinion, the most consistent brass performers predominate in feel rather than sound. However, in most cases, they do not seem to be aware of this vital fact. Let us consider the factors involved in the sensation theory. Because if you are to develop and maintain your maximum playing consistency, it is essential that you thoroughly comprehend your pre-playing and playing sensations so that you may constantly utilize your unified sensation during your performance. Your pre-playing sensation is the feel that you experience in your embouchure formation and anatomy a split second before you execute your attack for the particular tone to be played. Your playing sensation is the feel that you experience in your armature formation and anatomy during the actual blowing of your instrument. Your unified sensation, the must in all consistent brass playing, is the merging of your pre-playing and playing sensations into one solidified feel. On your so-called good playing days, your pre-playing and playing sensations merge into the essential unified sensation. When your performance is not up to par, your pre-playing and playing sensations are and act as separate and independent factors. Therefore, the purpose of your daily warm-up routines must be to reestablish yesterday's unified sensation or to adjust and align your pre-playing and playing sensations until they merge into this vital unified sensation. If you perform this essential daily task in an intelligent manner, it is possible that your unified sensation will remain consistent from one plane to the next. Always remember that your nerves, not your muscles, dictate mouthpiece placement. A consistent unified sensation means consistent performance. Widely separated pre-playing and playing sensations mean inconsistent performance. The player who rarely requires a lengthy warm-up routine has either a natural or an acquired ability for retaining his unified sensation from one performance to the next. It is because of this fact that some players are and remain splendid performers with little or no warm-up and surprisingly little practice. Any performer can develop and maintain this much coveted form of playing satisfaction. However, he must be ever conscious of his pre-playing and playing sensations merging into the essential unified sensation during his daily warm-up and practice periods. Remember, practice without concentration is just a little better than no practice at all. Every individual possesses five basic senses: touch, hearing, sight, taste, and smell. They vary in relative prominence and sensitivity with each and every person. For example, many performers who possess perfect or absolute pitch, that is, the ability to recognize and name the exact pitch of any tone sounded, regardless of the timbre, often play with faulty intonation because of a weak sense of feel. There are also many performers who possess relative or related pitch, that is, the ability to recognize and name the pitch by actual relationship with another pitch, often play well in tune because of a strong sense of feel. This balance between the unified sensation and the intonation is vital for developing and maintaining fine intonation and maximum playing proficiency. Considerable concentration in the proper channels may be absolutely essential on your so-called bad playing days, so that you may adjust and align your pre-playing and playing sensations and make them merge harmoniously into the unified sensation. Perseverance is a definite virtue at this point, because the entire sensation theory is often vague and difficult to comprehend, and even more exacting to execute when it is first attempted. Your unified sensation of today must be an exact duplicate of your unified sensation of yesterday. This means consistent all-around performance. The idea of mastering the proper feel at the proper time must be foremost in your mind during your daily warm-up routines. Gradually, the proper sensations will be introduced and slowly assimilated. During the initial stages of any warm-up routine, remember how it feels, not how it sounds. Your first task in executing your daily warm-up routine in the proper manner is to recall your sensations for the tone to be played before attempting to produce it. The following suggestions may be of value to you in accomplishing this vital initial step. Keep your eyes closed throughout. Number one, imagine how the note to be played will feel, not sound, before attempting to produce it. Number two, form your lips into their playing position, that is, without your mouthpiece or instrument, to create the feel for the note to be played. Number three, form your lips into their playing position without your mouthpiece or instrument, and allow your air to pass very lightly between them to create the feel for the note to be played. Number four, form your lips into their playing position. Place your mouthpiece into its playing position, no instrument used, to create the feel for the note to be played. No sound should be emitted. Number five, form your lips into their playing position. Place your mouthpiece into its playing position, no instrument used, and allow your air to pass lightly between your compressed embouchure formation to create the feel for the note to be played. No sound should be emitted. When you have succeeded in mastering this essential feel, called your pre-playing sensation, then execute and sustain the tone in mind. While you are sustaining the tone, ask yourself, is this the way I thought it would feel? On your so-called bad playing days, your answer after your initial attempt is invariably no. Remove your mouthpiece from your lips and repeat the entire process very slowly, as many times as is required in order to merge your pre-playing sensation with your playing sensation, so that they may become one unified sensation. When your sensation before playing and your sensation while playing become one sensation, you have succeeded and effecting the necessary adjustment and alignment. Always strive to arrive at the unified sensation as early as possible in your daily warm-up routines. You are definitely not prepared to concentrate on pitch and sound until this task has been adequately performed. This is Donald S. Reinhardt. I am reading from my newly written book called The Encyclopedia of the Pivot System. I have just concluded a 12-point question and answer introduction. Chapter 2, Posture. Question 1. What are some of the most common incorrect posture habits? Some of the most common incorrect posture habits when playing in a sitting position are slouching in the chair, leaning against the back of the chair, winding the legs around the chair legs, crossing the legs, holding the arms against the body, jutting the head forward as though peering into the distance. That is the forward head position. Bending the spine forward into a stooped, round-shouldered attitude. That is the forward spine arch. And excessive body movement. Some common incorrect posture habits when playing in a standing position are holding the arms against the body, jutting the head forward, that is the forward head position, bending the spine forward, that is the forward spine arch, standing with the feet placed too far apart, and excessive body movement. Some common incorrect posture habits when playing while marching are holding the arms against the body, jutting the head forward, that is the forward head position, too much stiffness in the legs, causing the mouthpiece to bob and shift its position upon the lips, and such excessive body movement from the hips up, that the same difficulty results. Question 2. Are there dangers in general physical well-being inherent in some of the incorrect posture habits? Playing with the legs crossed may bring on a multitude of physical dangers: hernia, rupture, and hemorrhoids are the most common and represent only a few. It is possible for the forward head position to result in neck strain and a continually irritated throat. Slouching in the chair impairs the lung action and causes pressure on the internal organs. The forward spine arch, if maintained for a great length of time, can cause permanent misalignment and well-known back difficulties later in life. Holding the arms tightly against the body restricts the inhalation and can cause other faulty posture habits. Question number 3. What is the general definition of correct playing posture from the hips up? Correct playing posture demands that the head be maintained in a slightly backward, slightly downward position with the neck relaxed This prevents a restriction in the throat passage, which is caused by bending the head and neck too far forward. The head and neck position just described is known as the tube position in the pivot system. Correct playing posture also demands that the spine be slightly arched in a backward manner and the arched spine, neck, head, and throat be as one. This body position enhances breathing and tonguing by allowing a wide open air passage. The arms must be kept away from the body. It must be thoroughly understood that this posture from the hips up must prevail whether standing, sitting, or marching. When sitting, keep the feet flat and firm on the floor and never permit any form of leg crossing to take place. Playing with the legs crossed has injured the lower extremities of many brass performers. Question number 4. How is the correct playing posture related to correct breathing? The correct playing posture is related to correct breathing in that it is the very foundation of correct breathing. Therefore, it must be mastered as soon as possible in the brass student's career. Incorrect posture habits, such as slouching in the chair, forward head position, crossing the legs, wrapping the legs around the chair legs, arms against the body, excessive body movement, forward spine arch, and allowing the spine to touch the back of the chair, can definitely prevent the development of correct breathing. Lapsing into these careless habits of incorrect posture can bring about the deterioration and eventual destruction of correct breathing, even if it has already been mastered. Therefore, it is safe to say that correct posture habits while playing must be mastered before any correct breathing can be developed and maintained. Question number 5. How is the evil habit of the forward head position formed? The evil habit of the forward head position is formed by slouching in the chair, leaning against the back of the chair, winding the legs around the chair legs, crossing the legs, holding the arms against the body, permitting the forward head position, allowing the forward spine position, excessive body movement, defective vision, improper lighting, low stands, badly written manuscripts, cramped playing quarters, body fatigue, and laziness and carelessness in general. Remember, the word relax does not mean collapse. Relaxing suggests a loosening of the muscles, but collapsing indicates an alteration of some kind or other. Develop and maintain the two position for the correct head and neck position, as described later in this chapter, and all the evils mentioned above can be completely eliminated. Question number six. What is meant by the two position for the head? The term two position is used in the pivot system to describe the carriage of the head when standing erect. To assume it, hold the head back, slightly down, and relaxed. This produces an open throat, and the base of the tongue is thoroughly relaxed. This head position must be maintained throughout all the playing postures, sitting, standing, and marching. Question number seven. How does the two position for the head affect the performance? When the two position for the head is retained throughout the playing, the throat maintains an open, relaxed position, and the base of the tongue is thoroughly relaxed. This essential head position, that is, the head slightly back, down, and relaxed, makes unobstructed breathing, agile tongue articulation, and a clean attack possible at all times. Therefore, it is safe to say that this correct head position definitely improves the sound and attack, increases the speed of the tongue, and both confidence and consistency in performance are greatly enhanced. This is Donald S. Reinhardt. I am reading from my newly written book called The Encyclopedia of the Pivot System. I will continue my chapter on posture with question 8 on tape number 3.